This is a conversation with Christina Brady, CEO and co-founder of Luster AI. With 18 years in revenue operations and experience training over 13,000 sales professionals, with a unique background in acting, music, and improv, Christina brings creativity and adaptability to sales leadership. I loved how she bridges the art of human connection with the science of AI, showing that while AI can enhance sales effectiveness, it can never replace empathy, persuasion, and improvisation.
Awesome.
So, very nice to meet you, Christina. Thanks very much for joining the Humans and AI show podcast. Sometimes I introduce it as a podcast. Yeah, let's get into it. So, Christina, you've been an artist, musician, improv performer, and now you're a revenue leader. But before going towards all these, your amazing career, I would like to start with this question. Okay. If you were to introduce yourself to me without mentioning your occupation, how would you describe yourself? How would you introduce yourself to me?
I would probably say that I'm a lifelong artist that is enjoying various types of canvases in the way that it's applied. Because I firmly believe that your background and who you are absolutely influences your work. And if you don't bring a little piece of who you are into everything that you do, you miss out on a lot of opportunities for joy. And so I'd probably say that, an artist with many canvases.
That's a very good one, actually. Right now, you are the CEO and co-founder of Luster AI. It's an AI role play platform for sales and go-to-market team, right? It's like a training SaaS B2B for go-to-market team, right? So training what they are lacking or what is the things that they're wrong, help their company to make more revenue. So before you build this startup, what was the exact problem you felt in your own sales team that made you say, we need AI to fix this? We need this.
Yeah, this is the right use case for AI versus people. I would say Luster has an AI role play tool. The way that we deploy it is very specific. So what Luster actually does is we're a predictive enablement company that has an AI role play tool. So we diagnose your entire go-to-market team's skill deficiencies. We predict where those deficiencies are about to erode revenue and actual customer conversations. And then we prescribe the custom purpose-built enablement assets to overcome those gaps before they ever erode revenue. And that includes AI role play and practice and skill drills and coaching and all of those things. And it comes from, to your question, my background is 18 years as an operator. I started as an account executive, a salesperson, and worked my way up to multiple forms of leadership, always across scaling B2B organizations. And I've also been a trainer for the last 15 years. And so if I think to my experience, I was unbelievably frustrated by the fact that the way that teams go to market is we make our customers collateral damage to our inability to measure the proficiency of our team before it erodes revenue. Everything is so reactive. And I was shocked when we would lose a deal or when our KPIs or our metrics would drop or churn would increase or we would trit reps because they weren't hitting their targets or we'd hired the wrong people and had no idea. And I said, how do we operate in today's day and age with so much ambiguity and so little data? And I said, if only there could be an objective way to understand the proficiency of my team at all times and make data-derived decisions from that, you can change the way that people produce revenue. We no longer wait for revenue erosion to identify that there's an issue. And the fact that there was no tool or platform or business or company that had anything like that in existence, I said, this is the right use case for AI to make humans more powerful by giving them the data and the things that they can't see and then letting them make human decisions with that data.
Okay, makes sense. So you said something like anything that distracts from revenue generating activity is generally a bad thing, which, so I would like to understand, what do you mean with that, anything that distracts from revenue? What is exactly that part?
Yeah, when you look at a revenue producer or a manager or an executive, there's a lot of different facets to what they're doing every day. And they can usually be bucketed into, are these administrative tasks that I need to do to be operationally sound? And are these tasks that are going to directly impact my ability to do my job and produce revenue for the organization? And so you have a lot of sales reps that are doing activities where they're taking training that feels checkbox, but there's no way to know if the training that they're doing is actually related to a measured gap that they have. But you will have phenomenal training and enablement teams that build incredible training for reps. And they say, hey, everybody on Tuesday at 1 p.m. has to go do this training. So when I'm in that training, I'm not making calls. I'm not sending emails. I'm not following up with customers. I'm not doing industry research. I'm sitting in this training. Now, let's say that you have your entire revenue team sitting in a training for 1 hour. And right now, all of them are training on, for example, discovery questions, right? What are the kinds of questions that we should be asking for discovery? For the individuals on that team where that is a measured weakness of theirs, that training is going to help them. For the others where that is not a gap that they have, they're not only sitting in a training addressing a gap that they don't have, but they're also not spending time addressing the gaps that they do have. So they're going to continue going and making these revenue impacting mistakes because we're not meeting them where they are with what they need because we're trying to treat everyone on the team exactly the same. And so that's an example of a distraction. I'm stopping doing my job to go do a training that I don't need during time that I don't have versus prescribing the individual assets to an individual so that we say, hey, you have a measured gap. It's about to impact revenue. So the time that we are now taking off the floor per se has a high ROI because it's going to help you produce revenue more. So again, it's down to making everybody do everything all of the time is not a great way to run a go-to-market team.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you this because I feel everything in life is sales. So it's like we are constantly selling. Even the people that think that they're not selling, you are selling all the time. All the time. So my question here is, I found it so difficult sometimes to understand what is good sales versus what is a bad sale because everybody's different. And maybe, in my opinion, like sometimes you can see that someone is doing a good sales, but is selling good, like it's a good sales, let's say, but they're not closing the deal. And other people that are not as good sales leaders or sales rep or whatever, but they are able to close more deals. So what do you think is there? Like, I don't know if it's like right now, well, we're using like AI, it's helping a lot with sales for sure and technology. But do you think that has to be as well with the human aspect of the sales part?
Yeah. There's a very big difference between somebody who is good at selling somebody and an individual who is good at helping their customers solve the problems that they have. There's two very different things. I could sell you a motorcycle and I could have an amazing talk track. I could know all of the features. I could tie to all the reasons why somebody wants to buy a motorcycle. And you look at me and say, wow, you're a great salesperson. But you're sitting there and you go, there's just one problem. I have absolutely no desire or need whatsoever for a motorcycle. So you just sold me a motorcycle and you did a great job doing it. I don't actually need that. I'm actually in the market for something else that's entirely different. And so there's a big difference between reps who say the right things and reps who do the right things. The folks who are good at sales are good at a couple of different things. One, they're good at really identifying what is the core issue that this individual needs to solve right now. Do they have a problem? Do they want to solve this problem? Do they need to solve this problem right now? And if so, how can we help them solve this problem? In there, you're intertwining storytelling, you're pulling data, you're referencing case studies, you're asking questions, you're getting curious, you're qualifying in and out. You're not trying to sell somebody something, you're trying to find a fit versus I've got a great talk track, I know this product inside and out, I could sell this to anybody. That comes across disingenuous. That comes across as patronizing. And so that's usually not what works. That's also a lot easier to do. It's a lot easier for me to memorize a top track of how to sell a product and jam it down your throat. And hey, a stopped clock is right twice a day. Every now and then I might make a sale because I happen to smack into somebody that needs a motorcycle, but I'm not doing any of the work to research my audience and then prescribe a solution to them. I'm just trying to sell. And there's a big difference between those two things.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like most of the times when you like try to buy something or you want to solve a problem that you have, and I feel like most of the sales people don't listen. They don't ask questions and they don't listen. So it's like, how are you going to understand, how are you going to solve the problem of your customer, of your client, if you don't even ask or listen to what they need, their problems, to solve their problems? It's kind of very interesting there. But that's the thing, is like another whole topic. So, Christina, yeah, because if we go into that, we go somewhere else, but it's not, yeah. So, okay. Talking a little bit, coming back to Luster AI. So, how do you avoid using Luster AI as a AI as a judge instead of AI as a coach?
That is such a good question. And this is one that comes up a lot, because a lot of times reps are really hesitant to do any kind of role play or training or practice in general, because they're worried that it's going to expose areas where they have deficiencies. And the reality is, every organization should be measuring people based on their performance, right? Your performance should be the measurement of whether you are successful in this role or not. And that's performance against hard skills, soft skills, your ability to achieve all the tasks that you need to, and of course, the revenue output. A tool like Luster is meant to help an individual perform at their best. And so when we're selling this tool, we don't say, hey, use Luster as a performance management tool. Their score in Luster should tell you if they're ready to do their job. Absolutely not. If anything, we say, Luster is an opportunity for your reps to try new talk tracks, to try selling into new personas, to really stretch the capability of what's possible, to get the reps in. Think about it as, if you were to judge somebody on running a marathon, would you judge them based on how they're training for the marathon and their capability to run on the treadmill as long as they need to beforehand? Absolutely not. Training gets ugly. Training gets sweaty. You make mistakes. You fall down. You trip. But you fall down to learn how to walk. And so Luster is the capability to give you all of the mistakes that you would have made in a customer interaction. We want you to make those mistakes in Luster. And so then saying, hey, you're going to grade people based on their proficiency makes absolutely no sense when you frame it that way. So what we say is, grade people based on their performance and their ability to hit their targets. That's where you're grading them. What they're doing in Luster and in training, those scores should be terrible. We want them to try new things and make their mistakes there. So it's really around mindset. It's also why we typically don't sell into HR, because HR is looking for that, like, how do we grade people? How do we proficiency map them? How do we have, like, how do we nine box our teams? How do we determine who's the right fit? HR should be doing that based on output, not based on the scores in a tool that is meant to up-level people, right? Don't grade me based on my treadmill. Grade me based on how quickly I'm running the race.
Great. Do you think that cool AI agents ever replace all salespeople for a company?
I actually do not. I do not, because I don't think there's a capability. And I think this is where a lot of companies are potentially going to get this wrong. I think that there is a capability to build an AI agent or persona or bot that will feel, look, and act like a real person. Is there capability to build that? Absolutely. We're already seeing instances of that. It's creepy. Do human beings want that? I don't think that they do. I don't think that human beings today or tomorrow, when it comes to working through critical issues in their life or in their business, want to do that with an AI, even if they could. Think about the idea of, you could basically take the Super Bowl and replace on a screen every player with an AI robot. Would it be as inspirational and fun to watch a bunch of AI bots play the Super Bowl? No, there's no inspiration there whatsoever. We want to see people persevere and rise above. Is there going to be AI replacing people in the entire sales process? No way. I think there's always going to be that feeling of when you tell that you have an AI agent on the phone and you start screaming representative and pushing zero because you just want to talk to a person who has that element of empathy. I think that will exist. Are there parts of the sales process that will be replaced with AI and AI agents? To that answer, I think yes. I think the human role in a sales process is going to shift massively. I think it's going to get much more prescriptive. I think it's going to get much more specific. I think it's going to become much more advisory and consulting. I see the human element of sales existing in mid to late stage funnel when we're really getting deep and dirty and rolling up our sleeves and problem solving with our customers. I think front of funnel is a really good place to replace a lot of that really awkward interaction with AI for both individuals. So front of funnel AI replacement, I think that's possible. Full replacement of sales reps by AI, I don't think so.
Ready. Humans, we're still needed.
Yep, we are. And like other humans need other humans. And I think we always will.
That's great. So you've been in a very long journey and you have a lot of experience in sales. Do you have any mentor or mentors? It can be a person, it can be a community, or it can be even a book. It doesn't have to be just a person. It can be a thing. But yeah, that you could recommend to myself or to the audience that we could follow and we could learn from about sales or your industry.
Yeah. Community for me is huge. So I'm a part of Pavilion, which is a big community, especially in B2B SaaS. And the people that I've met through that and the mentorship and sponsorship that I've gotten from that community has been absolutely incredible. I'm always inspired by other people. If I think through other folks in my career who have been so meaningful for me, I think about people who are other incredible practitioners in their space. I think about people like Amy Volus, who is one of the leading voices in building out your hiring process and what types of people to hire and when and what executives you really need for your organization. So if you're thinking about building and evolving go-to-market and hiring the right people, right? Amy Volus is an amazing person that comes to mind. And she's also been a real long-time personal mentor of mine as well. And so I would say community. And then finding individuals who have a zone of genius that you do not is absolutely critical.
Yeah, 100%. So with your music arts background, have you taken those skills, let's say, and put it into your revenue teams? Do you?
Oh, yeah. The most notable example of that is I actually have led and still lead corporate improv workshops. So my background not only is in acting and music, but I was an improv performer with IO Chicago and Second City for about 12 years. I did stand up for a while just earlier on in my life. And the muscle that you build by doing that removes the fear of the unknown. And so much of what creates anxiety amongst salespeople is that fear of the unknown, the fear of the rejection, the fear of being asked a question that you don't know the answer to, the fear of coming across a buyer who is not the right communication style for you. And there's so much of, are they going to hang up on me? Are they going to be mean to me? Are they going to say something that I don't understand? Are they going to respect me? Are they going to... And doing something like an improv really takes your brain and it retrains it from fearing the unknown to embracing the unknown. People think that improv is about being funny and making people laugh. And it like totally can be, but it's actually more around that muscle and being able to be dynamic and pivot very quickly and never finding yourself caught off guard with nothing to say. And so where I've brought that in professionally is for the last 15 years, I've been leading corporate improv workshops. So when a company has a sales kickoff or a company kickoff or a big training, I'll come in and do a corporate improv workshop and start to train their go-to-market team, their customer-facing employees on building this muscle that removes a lot of the anxiety that can degrade performance. And so it's been this really beautiful way to merge my past with my future and actually achieve some good and help people perform better than they were previously.
Yeah, funny enough, I also try a little bit improv, I have to say. So it's very, in the beginning, it can be a bit intimidating, but I feel like for me, improv taught me a lot to when you don't know something, you cannot say no. It's yes and, right? So you're kind of like, you have to say something, whatever, and just move on and just let yourself be without feeling judged or anything. So I think that's for sales is the same thing, because in sales, it's a constant rejection. Like all the time, it's a rejection after another one. And I think the improv is a very good exercise actually for that too. Just don't take it personal. Just keep going, move on until you just play the role and you have fun. Until you have fun, I have to say.
Yeah, you have to. You have to have fun.
Great. So, Christina, I talk a lot with many kind of CEOs, top leaders, same as you. They didn't tell me this, but I often as well listen to people like, for example, top like Elon Musk or these kind of giants, Tesla companies, right? They often describe them as lonely people. Like they don't really have many friends. They are very, because they cannot trust many people. They're big people. So everybody wants to be their friends. They want to be near, close to them because it's extra benefits. So
yeah.
Do you feel that's true as a CEO and a co-founder? Do you think like when your company is like growing, achieving a success, do you think that you as a CEO more than the rest of the team become more lonely and having more like harder time to trust people?
I can see where that happens. Trusting people is very difficult. And as a CEO, there is an element, I would say it's not loneliness, but it's an isolated experience. Because as the CEO, when I was a sales rep or even a sales leader, one of the things that I was able to do is have camaraderie with my team when things were going well, but also when they were not. As a CEO or even an executive, right, everything that you say fundamentally impacts the business. You could be having a really bad day in one event, and on accident, you've just disrupted the comfort that people have in the organization and you've instilled fear, whereas really you were just trying to vent as an individual. And so I would say it's less loneliness. It's more there's an increased responsibility to make sure that you are consistently caring for the experience of the entire team. And it means that sometimes you have to put their experience above your own. And I think for some people that can feel lonely. It can feel lonely to bear the responsibility of making sure that you are looking out for people more than you are looking out for yourself, making the right decisions for the business, even if it personally impacts you negatively, right? There's a lot of that sacrifice for the business and for your people. And I can see where folks would say, that's lonely. I don't necessarily view that as loneliness. I consider myself very lucky to be able to build a company like this with incredible people. And it's not always easy to bear that responsibility, but I view it as a gift and a massive privilege. And to combat what can feel like loneliness, that's where I lean on the people who are in my professional circle and in my community, because CEOs understand other CEOs. And so there's always an avenue that you can go to try and combat that loneliness. But in my opinion, it's so much more important to make sure that you are looking out for the people who are spending the time of their life building your vision as a CEO, right? I'm lucky enough to be at the helm of this company building my vision. It's not the same level of importance for everybody else in the organization. So how do I make them feel massively seen and heard and valued and validated at the same time? That requires some mental tweaking that I personally am happy to do, even if it's hard sometimes.
Yeah, I feel like more than lucky thing that you work very hard to get what you have right now. So I wouldn't say like, okay, like something that you find, but you got to work towards it, I guess. So,
yeah.
So, Christina, you train 30,000 plus sellers in your career. What are the patterns of the successful ones? What are the main patterns that you see in them?
Yeah, I would say they are able to identify a repeatable process and they understand the difference between agility and absorption. Really great reps are able to digest and distill the process that they have and apply it in a variety of different places. They're flexible. They figure it out. They think on their feet. They're not waiting for somebody else to solve a problem for them. They're unbelievably proactive and they're passionate about the job they're selling and what they are doing. Absolutely. But then you get down to this idea of agility versus absorption. Like they know when to be agile and pivot as needed. They also know when and how to absorb a punch, right? So they're like, okay, this is going to be tough. It's going to be difficult. I'm going to hunker down. I'm going to get through that, right? So there's that element of grittiness and getting through the really hard times. I also find that really good sellers tend to be less volatile emotionally than others, meaning you're not as impacted by your environment as other people, because any revenue-based employee, right? If part of your job is having a measured conversation with somebody else and thus your compensation and your livelihood is tied to that, the ups and downs that come with this job is unbelievable. You've got great days, bad days, medium days, and they can all like change within the hour, right? You can get back the biggest deal of your life while finding out that the other biggest deal of your life just eroded and you've lost all of that. And you have to make up that revenue. That can all happen in one day, right? Like you can be dealing with massive change in your work life, your personal life, and you have to balance all of that. And if you are somebody that has a little bit less emotional intelligence and you're flying by the seat of your pants and you're able to be very easily impacted by the waves of the ocean, the job's going to be a lot harder. You're going to burn out. And so you have to have a mental fortitude to get through difficult times and compartmentalize them properly. I actually think the majority of the skills that make a really good sales rep comes down to that. It comes back to the capability to actually navigate the difficult challenges.
Yeah, I guess that you're talking about resilient too, but it's like the emotional roller coaster of a salesperson is, that's a big thing. Okay, Christina, thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for joining the Humans on AI podcast. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Humans on AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human. One story at a time. See you in the next episode.